the station with more hair, more flair, yet so debonair.
RadioInfluence.com.
He heard it.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top. Wow. And here's Lucas as I mentioned. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big he's outreached Franklin. Retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC 215 is going to take place on Saturday night inside Rogers Place in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And we are going to preview this fight card that has a new main event here on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast on Radio Influence. Daniel Galvan and I are going to talk about that main event change as Ray Borg is out of UFC 215 due to an illness. So Demetrius Johnson no longer on this fight card. The new main event is Amanda Nunes, Valentina Shevchenko for the UFC Women's Bantamweight title. Also, we'll talk about some of the other fights that are going to be a part of this fight card that'll be on Saturday night in Edmonton. But, of course, we are brought to you by Fight TV. And if you've not heard, Fight has a partnership with the UFC. Fight will have UFC 215 on their app for $59.99. Along with having the fights, they're going to have a chat room going with Carlos Condit. So be sure to check out that Fight app where you can watch MMA wrestling and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. You can download Fight free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV. /radioinfluence/ Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV /radioinfluence/. Of course, that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. And, well, Daniel, that might be how I have to watch UFC 215.
Yeah, Jason, what a coinkadink here. I think the last time we did a preview for McGregor Mayweather, I kind of talked about how I was very concerned about Hurricane Harvey potentially hitting my area. I was fortunate enough to it went a bit northern to where I live, and now here we are previewing UFC 215. And I think the only thing either of us can think about is the Hurricane Irma heading towards you. So, what's your situation like, man?
Right now, it's just a waiting game. As we're recording this here on Friday morning, I think for pretty much the last 3 days, I've been watching, whether it's local news or the Weather Channel. I would tell you, on Tuesday night, Daniel, I'm watching the Weather Channel. They're broadcasting from some studio that had to be some dude's man cave. So there's a bar, there's beer taps with a Weather Channel logo on it, and there's a pinball machine for the movie Twister. Someone has a sixth sense of humor here. Right now for me, it's sitting there and waiting to see when this thing's going to take the turn. Of course, I'm here on the east coast of Florida, in Tampa, Florida. So based on the track now, we are going to be to the west of the storm. The strong parts are on the east side of the storm. I think one of the things that, and look, you've grown up in South Texas. You have been a part of hurricane preparations all your life. I've grown up in Florida all my life, so hurricane preparations is something you're very well familiar with. But I think because of Harvey, a lot of people here in Tampa are definitely freaking out.
Yeah, it's certainly created, the entire country's aware of kind of what a hurricane can cause because of what we saw with Harvey. I mean, in particular, the flooding, largely due to the speed of that hurricane. It was moving so damn slowly. So, I hope to God this is the last hurricane we as a country have to deal with this year. Obviously, if you look at the projection, there's another Hurricane Jose like on the back end, which is absolutely nerve-wracking. But I hope everyone in Florida is taking the precautions. And it's kind of, there's a large mixed martial arts community in Florida. I know you know the state much more than I do. Kind of when you look at some of the top camps, Jason, where are they situated in Florida in relation to hurricane?
They're pretty much right there. If this thing hits, dead on Miami, which right now it looks like it'd be a little to the to the west of Miami. You know, it would be interesting, you know, they would, you know, you look at American Top Team, you look at Black Zillions, Combat Club, MMA Masters, they're all there in that Miami-Dade County area. So they're all going to be right there, which, I mean, look, you have to wonder, you know, for someone like Amanda Nunes, who, you know, is now the main event of UFC 215, she lives, you know, in the Miami area. You have to wonder, is that all on her mind heading into her fight on Saturday night? I mean, it's part of the question marks there, but, you know, thought and prayers to all my Florida residents out there. You know, look, depending on whether I have power or not on Saturday night, you know, it looks like this storm's going to hit, you know, Sunday, Monday for here in the Tampa Bay area. It's, you know, I don't know if I'll be watching UFC 215 live or I'll be watching it after this storm goes through. But, you know, for us, we've done all the preparations, and, you know, it's a waiting. You know, one of the things I was talking to a buddy of mine, I said, you know, it's, you know, this is something we deal with all the time, but at least for us, we have a little warning. You know, it's not like if someone lives in California, an earthquake, you know, comes, no warning at all. So at least you can prepare, but, you know, it definitely seems that because of Harvey, a lot of people are taking more serious. I mean, I was out earlier this week, and you couldn't find water anywhere. There was actually a local watering company that does not, they only sell the, you know, commercial water to, you know, businesses, whatnot, and they opened their doors for, you know, the public this week and doing, you know, cases of water for $6. I mean, I heard some stories, and this is, I know they did this big price gouging line. People were trying to sell cases of water for $70.
Like stores or people?
Stores.
I feel like that's illegal.
It's high. But I mean, look, it's price gouging. I mean, there's some stuff I saw, like with, you know, people trying to fly out and, you know, it's just, you know, this is, when you live in Florida, you know, I mean, this is prime hurricane season. I mean, you're there in Southeast Texas, you've dealt with hurricanes throughout your entire life. I mean, the biggest thing that I saw that was just crazy to me, and, you know, and obviously I was a young kid when this happened, Hurricane Andrew, which absolutely devastated the Miami Homestead area. Back in 1992, and they had a graphic up that showed the size of Andrew in comparison to the size of Irma. And, I mean, Irma's like double the size. I mean, it's just...
I saw that picture, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, so, you know, we're, you know, all the preparations are done, but we are here to talk about UFC 215, which, of course, late Thursday night went through a fight card change. I actually found out by the change by waking up here on Friday morning to Daniel's text about this. Ray Borg had to pull out of this event due to a viral illness. The UFC released a statement on late Thursday evening, and the UFC statement on Ray Borg said this, quote, "Due to a viral illness to UFC flyweight contender Ray Borg, the main event bout against champion Demetrius Johnson at UFC 215 has been canceled. Borg was deemed unfit to compete by the UFC medical team. UFC 215, which is now headlined by women's bantamweight championship between Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko, will proceed as scheduled with 11 fights at Rogers Place in Edmonton, Canada. Moving to the pay-per-view main card will be a flyweight bout between Henry Cejudo and Wilson Hayes. Additionally, the Mitch Clark and Alex White lightweight contest will now kick off the FS1 prelims. With the removal of Johnson versus Borg, customers may request a full refund of purchase tickets at point of sale." And that was the UFC quote. I mean, to me, I think that's, you know, when you think about interesting storylines, I would be interested to see how many people actually request a refund.
I would too, because I feel like that percentage isn't as big as one would think. I just think it's a bit of a hassle to plan your day around going to an arena to watch a night of fights, and then the day before request a refund, unless you were already on the fence and felt guilty about purchasing tickets prior and this presents the opportunity to get your money back. I would assume that the percentage of people that usually get refunds with canceled fights, unless it's like a marquee fight, it is low, because it's not like the fight that was canceled was a fight that the people purchasing tickets absolutely were dying to see. I mean, they were probably dying to see Demetrius Johnson. You know, he is so phenomenal and so great that the selling point was not necessarily this matchup as much as it was watch the greatest of all time, according to Dana White. But I don't think this was the type of fight that will do a big dent in refunds. It's not like this was a one fight main card, and that was like a John Jones, Daniel Cormier type big fight. I mean, the main event got canceled, and there's certainly less buzz about this card, but it's not like the buy rate's going to go down from 600,000 to 150. It was already hovering around 100, 200,000, probably 100,000. So I don't know, Jason. I don't think it'll be too high, but I know we've been texting back and forth about the UFC Embedded, and I understand for the most part the UFC Embedded is all about promoting the UFC. You know, the third episode was entirely an Adidas infomercial. I mean, a Reebok infomercial, excuse me. Yeah, really well done. But DJ, and they just so happened to leave it in the episode. What a coinkadink. He bragged about how they were nearly sold out, say for like less than 100 tickets.
Yeah, I mean, there is something. Probably the biggest takeaway I had from Embedded this week was when Amanda Nunes is in a mall in Edmonton and she's walking around. They end up, she's taking photos with fans. And the last fan they show goes, "So, when are you fighting?" And she goes, "Oh, Saturday." I'm sitting there. I remember I text you as I watched this and go, how is this not edited out? Because it makes it look so bad that, what we believe is an MMA fan in Edmonton has no clue that Amanda Nunes is fighting in their hometown in just a couple of days.
That is so amazing. It's like one thing where if the UFC Embedded had this history of like not being like super UFC propaganda, which it should be, like for all intents and purposes, UFC Embedded is advertising for the UFC. Mm-hmm. But this totally zags to where everything else in this Embedded series zigs towards the UFC. I mean, this is so weird, so out of the ordinary. It's like, is there a malcontent UFC employee that decided to throw this little snippet in there or whatnot, or what's the editing process? I mean, they pile out so much content. I would imagine it's probably like three people in charge of the Embedded things. I mean, how many people do you think are in charge of that?
Oh, I think I think in terms of the final cut, I'm sure it's probably a handful of people. But
handful?
There's a lot of people who are involved in the putting of that show together, from shooting it. I mean, if you're part of the camera crew that's assigned to Amanda Nunes, how do you not sit there maybe, you know, in an email say, "Hey, by the way, guys, we might want to cut this out. I mean, we're both in broadcasting." You know, in live broadcasting and what I do with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, there is no editing. You know, it, what happens, happens. You know, when you're doing stuff for your newscast, you're taping that stuff. You can edit that if you don't like something the way it came out. But, man, I saw that, and you're supposed to be putting your fighters in the best light possible. And by putting that in there, I just think it's another way of just kind of the awful promotion the UFC has done with Amanda Nunes. I do not believe that losing Demetrius Johnson is going to hurt or help the buy rate. I know there are some people that believe, that Nunes can kind of still get a little bit of that rub off from, you know, fight against Ronda Rousey last year. But I mean, if I'm going to set an over under number on pay-per-view buys, and look, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, I'm here in Florida, so I'm dealing with the hurricane. I've always been told Florida is a very good pay-per-view market for the UFC. I mean, Dana White's publicly said, "Hey, we do well on TV here. We just can't get people in the building." You know, so that I think will hurt their pay-per-view buy rate on Saturday night. If I say over under number 150,000 buys, you going over or under?
Under, big time. Maybe. Not big time, but not big. Not big.
Okay.
Time
let's say the number. Okay, 125.
That's exactly where my head was at.
Okay.
I'll probably still say under, slightly, because, okay, you got the Florida deal. You got the Florida deal. You got all the people that showed out $100 million from McGregor Mayweather. People in Houston do not care about this car. They're too busy They're too busy fixing up their houses or helping people they know fix up their houses, or just not worried about the UFC. Like, if, you know, you're talking about two huge markets, Florida and Houston, in the surrounding area that just – they just are reacting to a natural disaster. And here's a big one, Jason. If you're a sports fan, just a sports fan, there is no way you are choosing UFC 215 over college football. There just isn't. I mean, this is a stacked night of college football. And you may tell yourself, I'm going to go check this one out at a Buffalo Wild Wings, you know, because you can watch your college football and then check out the main card later. I'm assuming most of these B-dubs are showcasing the fight. There's like three or four fights I really love, but I really get the sense that there are so many different circumstances going into this one that this is going to be one of the lowest buy rates we've seen in quite a while. And there have been some low ones we have seen, especially with DJ headlining. So I think it's going to be a bad one, man. I think hovering around 125,000. But let's not make light of the – let's not forget this one, Jason. When the Nunes-Shevchenko fight was originally canceled because Nunes pulled out, what did Dana White say?
So we've now had back-to-back UFC pay-per-views headlined by a fighter Dana White said he could never trust in a pay-per-view again.
I forgot about that. That is hilarious. I mean, who else has Dana White said that about? Are we going to see Frank Shamrock and Ken Shamrock in the next pay-per-view? Yeah, so, I mean, what are you feeling in terms of buy rate if you go over under at 125? Now again, this is incredibly a low number.
I would go slightly over. I think your number's somewhere in the 130 to 150 range most likely. You know, I mean, look, it's – I don't think that the UFC has done a good job. I mean, look, I think even before, you know, what happened on Thursday night, I don't think you could accurately say the UFC has done a phenomenal job of marketing this pay-per-view. I just think that they put so much all hands on deck in terms of UFC 214 and Mayweather-McGregor that these are just kind of the forgotten cards. But also, I think you have to also look at the fighters. I don't think Amanda Nunes has done a good job of promoting herself. And the same can be said for Valentina Shevchenko. I do feel that we know a piece of the story with both fighters in terms of who they are and what their life is like. But I feel like we could maybe know more about who they are that maybe would, you know, help entice. But, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, you had, okay, like look at my situation, Daniel. So, let's say I don't have power on Saturday night. I hope I do, but if I don't have power and you know what, and me and my wife are just looking for entertainment and literally we're pulling it off my iPhone, I'm telling you right now, in terms of my entertainment on Saturday night, you know, I'm putting on that Ohio State-Oklahoma game.
Yeah, and there are so many different other options in the college football world, because it doesn't just stop there. It's Ohio State, Oklahoma. It's Notre Dame, Georgia. It's Clemson, Auburn, and Stanford, USC. Like,
well, two of those games are in the afternoon.
Two of those games are in the afternoon. So the night games are probably what, USC, Stanford, and
Ohio State, Oklahoma. That is at 7:30 on ABC. And then Fox will have Stanford USC, which will be 8:30. Which, look, even though the FSU Alabama game was a pretty quick game in terms of college football, I mean, it lasted just over 3 hours. If you start getting a lot of replays, which, you know, to me is probably the thing I hate watching most about college football, because they replay every goddamn play.
Yeah,
it could easily be a 4 hour game. So, I mean, you could, you know, realistically, that USC Stanford game could last till 12:30. And so, you know, it's one of those things of, you know, you know, fans who are not all in on this card, they're not probably not going to buy regardless. I can tell you, my friends that we watch pay-per-views with, and we were in a group text this week, and, you know, I was like, hey, guys, what do y'all want to do? I go, obviously, it's contingent on weather, you know, and we all live very close to each other. But, you know, but everyone was inconsistent, like, hey, the fight we want to watch is Demetrius Johnson. I mean, yes, it is history. We're not going to see that. But when you look at the five fights on the pay-per-view right now, I like the pay-per-view. Now, look, when you're talking about dollar to dollar, I don't value it like I value UFC 214. I mean, UFC 214, obviously, you had the two, you know, greatest light heavyweights potentially of all time fighting each other. I mean, you look at these five fights on pay-per-view, Nunez Shevchenko, I don't know if there's a better female fight that you can make in the UFC right now. Maybe Cyborg Holm, but outside of that, I don't see a better women's fight that you can make right now. Magny Dos Anjos obviously is a big matchup. I thought it was interesting earlier this week that Sean Shelby came out and said that RDA was the backup plan if Damian Maia didn't take the Woodley fight at UFC 214. Cejudo Wilson Heist, obviously a big matchup there at 125 pounds. Latifi Pedro, that's a big matchup at 205 pounds. Very interesting to see Tyson Pedro, you know, how does he take that next step in his career? And then, of course, you got, I think, a big question mark in Gilbert Melendez dropping down to 145. Can he bounce back? Can he revitalize his career taking on Jeremy Stephens? I mean, to me, I think Stephens Melendez has Fight of the Night written all over it.
Yeah, this is going to be a card that lets the UFC know what the size of their hardcore fan base is. That's what they're going to know. Who are the people that are going to buy anything? And for those hardcore fans, there is a lot to like about that main card. You ran it down, and I think all five fights are incredibly compelling. And really, they were fortunate to have that Cejudo-Hayes fight on the prelims because, honestly, that is probably the second top non-title fight on the card. I would probably say the top non-title fight has to be Stephens Melendez because there's a great chance that's just a fight of the night. It has to be the odds-on favorite to be the fight of the night. There's one sleeper on the prelims we can get to later that I think might contend with it. But up and down, you either have a really compelling contest with action like Melendez Stephens, interesting prospect in Pedro, or fighters trying to rebuild their careers and get back to a championship opportunity like you have in the flyweight battle with Rafael Dos Anjos. And you mentioned Nunez Shevchenko. That's a great fight. The only other potential matchup I would posit to you that may be more compelling is one that we've already seen twice. It's Jan Chaychik and Claudia Gadella. And I don't even know if that actually tops Nunez Shevchenko, because I think the odds for that fight would still be would be moderately wide in Jan Chaychik's favor, whereas with here, this is a pretty damn close fight between Nunez and Shevchenko. So it's a good fight. Neither fighter is a household name. Nunez, obviously, more so than Shevchenko. And this is an incredibly important contest for Amanda Nunez because I think if she does get past Shevchenko, that's when you start to look at the women's bantamweight division and you begin to ask the question, well, then who the hell could potentially top her? That's when she could put herself in a position to be one of these dominant champions that we see in a couple of the UFC divisions.
Best prelim fight of the night is, my mind, Gavin Tucker, Rick Glenn.
Yep, we are in sync. I mean, you've seen Rick Glenn fight so often. I mean, how would you describe his fighting style?
Well, here's the interesting thing about him, though. Now trains at Team Alpha Male. So is he going to be a different fighter? Is he going to, you know, fight with a different style, no longer at Rufus Sport, now at Team Alpha Male? That's the question. I mean, Gavin Tucker, I mean, man, how could you not have been blown away with his UFC debut? So, I mean, it's one of those things of, will we see a different Rick Glenn? Will the fight mentality be different, or do we see the same guy we've seen for all these years?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think he is going to be aggressive, but even aggressive in the aspect of attempting at times to bring it down, because I think in this fight, we're going to see a lot of stand-up, but I think Gavin Tucker probably has the better of the stand-up in terms of just pure technique and landing strikes. He may get overwhelmed, and he definitely has given up experience, but Gavin Tucker at featherweight, like, he came in and absolutely wowed me against Sam Cecilia. So the ceiling is pretty high. I think at the bare minimum, between Glenn and Tucker, you're going to get a great fight. And at the absolute maximum, you're going to get a fight that steals the show. So, yeah, Tucker-Glenn is the fight to look forward to. I probably would have put it in the main event if I was the UFC when you kind of reordered this card. Sarah McMahon is certainly a bigger name. But when you contrast the potential excitement that you'll get out of a Tucker-Glenn fight or Sarah McMahon versus Ketlin Vieira, it is definitely in favor of Glenn Tucker. I think without a doubt, Jason, that will probably be a better fight than Sarah McMahon's fight. I don't know. Am I going out on a limb here?
No, I definitely don't think you're going out on a limb there. Before we start talking about some of the other, you know, the fights that are on the pay-per-view, do want to briefly get to a question we got about Demetrius Johnson. Obviously, this question came in prior to him his fight being pulled from the fight card. This came from Dwayne, saying that he personally tries and reserves any GOAT discussion until an athlete's career has concluded. But since it has already begun with Demetrius Johnson, do you believe if he is successful and he is rightfully in that conversation? If so, what criteria do you have to evaluate an athlete's place as potential GOAT? I think in terms of, you know, the GOAT, greatest of all time, if you're not familiar with that acronym, it's got to be, I think dominance has got to be part of it. But I think also the competition level, and that's where I think it can be tough to say Demetrius Johnson is the GOAT based on in comparison to who other fighters have fought in their weight classes. I mean, I think he has to be in the conversation just because how he's dominant he is, but would you put him ahead of an Anderson Silva in Anderson's heyday? I don't even know. I guess with the issues with John, I don't even know if we can put John in the conversation right now, because obviously there's a lot of uncertainty there. I mean, you got to mention Fedor. But I think dominance, he's got to be up there, but strength of competition, man, I don't know if I put him above, say, an Anderson or a GSP.
Yeah, I think those two, along with John Jones, are the top three. I mean, it's really hard to grapple with John Jones, mm-hmm. because had he not had what just took place with the testing, I mean, look, I'll just say it. I think he's the greatest of all time. I would say John is the greatest of all time. It feels weird talking about it because his career is just like one big hazard tape all over now. It's so weird and hard to contextualize. So I would say John Jones. I think GSP and Anderson are above DJ by a bit. I mean, they have the benefit of being – they have the benefit of being in the past where – so many of their welterweight opponents and middleweight opponents have made names for themselves maybe afterwards, but it also just felt like in the time that their challengers were slightly above DJ's challengers, because with Demetrius Johnson, there is a pretty decent drop-off after his challengers like Dodson, Benavidez, McCall, and I guess you can throw in Cejudo. Like, after that, there's a pretty big drop-off to, like, Tim Elliott, Bagatinov, Horiguchi, Curioso. Obviously, the technique and skill level of these fighters are higher than what we saw in the 2007 year, 2008 year. But for DJ, like, he is very rapidly rising up the ranks. And in terms of criteria, I think you laid it out perfectly. When I think of dominance, it's not only being dominant, but really making your head burst when it comes to how a guy fights. I remember watching Fedor Emelianenko fight, and with him, there was a certain mystique to every time he stepped into the cage. It was like a wow factor. Like, this is going to be magic, and his opponent has no chance to win. Obviously, Verdum did, but I got that same sense with Anderson Silva, BJ Penn at times, George St. Pierre, but it was more about, wow, how is he going to be able to score a takedown here? And for Demetrius Johnson, I think he's gotten to that level to an extent in that I wholeheartedly would believe Demetrius Johnson can beat any fighter at flyweight at any skill of the game. Like, it's like if Demetrius went in against Wilson Hayes and you told him you could only grapple with Wilson. As good as Wilson Hayes is at grappling, and it'd probably be stupid, I'd probably still pick Johnson. Because I have that much confidence in this guy with Matt Hume that he's almost perfected the sport. So it's a tad bit early, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see Demetrius Johnson defend his flyweight title, move up to bantamweight, and win that title too. And that's when we can start talking about him as the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, he's probably going to go up to 135 for us to have that, but we now know that Amanda Nunes, Valentina Shevchenko is the main event. I guess we should put an asterisk around that, too, because we are recording this prior to the weigh-ins. And we remember last time we previewed this rematch, the fight ultimately did not take place. When I saw earlier this week, I believe it was on Monday or Tuesday, when Amanda Nunes said she was 15 pounds overweight at that point for making weight, I was like, oof, Then yesterday she said she was 10 pounds, and I'm sitting there going, man, whew. I hope she can make weight. You know, and we'll find out when you know the official weigh-ins take place here on Friday morning in Edmonton. I know Mike Russell pointed this out, which I thought was an interesting note. According to the Edmonton bylaws with their commission, which obviously is under a lot of scrutiny and under a new director there, a new acting director, that the law says you only have one chance to weigh in. So if you miss weight on the first time stepping on the scale, you have missed weight. So it'd be interesting maybe see if maybe the UFC came in and said, hey, no, you're going to give these guys at least two opportunities, or these fighters two opportunities. You know, the main event, you know, obviously we broke it down, you know, just 2 months ago. And a question I thought of, and I don't know the answer to this question, Daniel, is who has the advantage with this fight being delayed 2 months? I guess I probably lean Amanda Nunes, just because obviously the medical condition he had, chance to recover from that. I mean, you know, Nia Ansaroff has, you know, talked about the fact of, you know, if she would have fought that night, she may have been only at, you know, 50% of what she could offer. So I guess I'd lean Amanda Nunes, but man, I don't know if there's a right answer.
Yeah, I guess that the result is today Amanda Nunes is fighting at 90% rather than 50%, then you have to go with Nunes to answer that question. She's benefited the most, but Shevchenko certainly benefited herself. It has to be a confidence factor, but more importantly, that's been a question that Nunes has been dealing with for this entire time. I'm assuming every time she's done media interviews, she's had to talk about pulling out of the last fight. That is a slight distraction. That is a bit of a negative. But for Amanda Nunes, if that negative means that she put herself in a position to be much more healthy and feel more confident about what her body will be able to do, especially later in the fight, that's where you give the nod to Nunes, just that she's likely in a better position to perform than she was 2 months prior. So, and it's so paramount in a five-round fight because kind of the book on Amanda Nunes headed into the previous matchup between these two was that if this, at the later this goes, the less it favors her. So it's so important for her to be in the best possible condition, both with like illnesses as well as just making the weight cut not drain her completely, because she is just an absolutely dominant fighter. But when that gas tank goes, Shevchenko is going to be able to capitalize in a big way.
And that's always going to be the question with Amanda, is what happens if this fight hits the third, fourth, or potentially the fifth round. I think in a way it's kind of that narrative that was around Tyron Woodley for a long time. You know, obviously his last two fights have dispelled that. But until she's able to go there, I mean, you go back and you look at the first fight, and, you know, look, if you break that fight into halves, which is really tough in a three-round fight, you know, the first half of that fight was all Amanda Nunes. But the second half of the fight, you saw Amanda wearing down, and then clearly in the third round, it was all Valentina Shevchenko. And when you look at their average fight time in the UFC, Amanda Nunes, 5 minutes and 9 seconds. That's top 10 among active fighters in terms of shortest average fight time. But on the other side, Valentina Shevchenko, her average fight time is 16 minutes and 7 seconds. And, you know, look, Valentina is a smaller 135er. She noted on Thursday that she doesn't have to cut any weight for this fight, where Amanda Nunes does. Amanda Nunes does have a 2-inch reach advantage. She is 3 inches taller than Valentina Shevchenko. You know, and when you look at the striking stats, you see, you know, Amanda does have the better striking stats. And a good reason why that is, you know, Amanda is a quick starter. She's looking to go out there and get the finish. And, you know, I think, you know, the game plans for both fighters are not going to change from the way they were preparing for this fight back in July. For Valentina, I think the keys of victory are you have to stop any takedown attempts, you know, stopping Amanda from being in top position, allowing her to use her strength and size on the ground. I think the other key for Valentina Shevchenko is get this fight to the third and fourth round. Test that cardio. And a third key for her is to make a lot of this fight in the clinch, to where she can hit knees, you know, to the stomach, and really maybe try to take down that cardio a little bit. For Amanda Nunes, I think the key, get the fight to the ground, use that size advantage. And two, she's got to use her length in this fight. She's done a great job with that in her UFC career of using her length. To me, those are, and you know, I think if this fight ends in the first 10 minutes, Amanda Nunes is still the UFC women's bantamweight champion. If this fight gets to the third round, you have to favor Valentina Shevchenko, right?
She's already shown it in their first fight. Things change. It's been since March 2016 when they fought at 196. But what you saw was basically what you laid out there. Two rounds to Nunez, only for Shevchenko to come out in the third and take advantage of a tired Nunez. There had to have been a lesson learned there. She likely has improved her conditioning, but it's so difficult. We have seen fighters that have issues with condition, and not often do they improve. Like, very few times do people with a rap for maybe getting tired halfway through the fight become cardio machines. What that tells you is that it's not necessarily like a willpower thing. It's not like, I choose to no longer have bad cardio, so I will run. I mean, there are probably other factors that are hard to individually, independently change that aspect of your game. Maybe it's how you employ your power and your strategy. And for Amanda, I guess she grapples with the two choices. Like, do you go out there and look to finish the fight early and dominate rounds early, potentially costing yourself the latter part of the bout? Or do you go out there and attempt to be conservative to allow yourself to fight similar rounds 1 through 4, rounds 1 through 5? And that's a tough one to grapple with, because it's just a matter of, for Amanda, I mean, all but two of her UFC fights have ended in the first round. That's what's gotten her to this point, that aggressive nature, putting opponents on their back and employing just a high volume of significant strikes. That has brought her success. Or do you adjust on the fly and kind of change your style in order to react to your previous fight with Shevchenko? Because again, I think looking at 135 up and down, 1 through 15, there is not anyone on the horizon that I would say is better than Valentina Shevchenko. This is going to be the toughest fight for Amanda Nunes at 135 for quite a while. And this may be one in which the opponent is so tough that for Nunes, she's going to want to change. But honestly, if I was giving advice to Amanda Nunes, Jason, it would be stay the course and use what got you there. Be aggressive early, and if you cannot finish fights, at least attempt to steal a 10-8 round so that evens things out as the fight goes on. I mean, if you're Amanda Nunes, you don't have to win. You just have to draw. And I don't think she'll have to worry about that, though. I think we'll have a definitive winner. And even though I would suggest Nunes do that, Jason, I got to be honest. I'm kind of like I did in the first fight. That we previewed that didn't happen. I'm kind of leaning towards Shevchenko to win here.
It's a coin flip fight in my mind. And, you know, I went with Shevchenko the first time, or the second time, when it was supposed to take place 2 months ago. I'm not changing my pick. I'm still saying Shevchenko. I think she gets this into the later rounds, and that's where ultimately she does take over in this fight. But, you know, to me, it's a coin flip fight, but I think that we're going to see a new champion crowned.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, the stand-up of Shevchenko is so damn great. She has so much experience in so many different martial arts outside of mixed martial arts. I believe she has like 142 million Muay Thai championships to her name. I don't understand how these people hand out championships. Like, I believe it's actually 17, her sister said. And I'm like, do they hand this out 4 times a year? Like, how many times do you win a Muay Thai world title? But it's like, yeah, 42-time Muay Thai champion. Anyways, bottom line, she's really good at striking. Gives up a bit in power striking, but more than makes up for it in outpointing opponents by landing shots on shots on shots. So I don't really know how she will be able to finish Nunez unless Nunez gets tired and puts herself up to get grounded and pounded and TKO'd out or submitted. So I think Nunez is obviously incredibly tough. I mean, to me, the worst storyline coming out of that fight being canceled was the Nunez is scared thing, which is so dumb for a high-level UFC fighter, that storyline. So I think Nunez makes it out all 5 rounds, Jason. But I think we're talking about a 48-47 decision for Valentina Shevchenko.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you understand why she pulled out of that fight. I mean, look, there is a financial aspect to it, but This is, I think, going to be, and maybe it's not fair for Amanda Nunes, but I think that this is going to be essentially give the UFC a meter of, you know, can she, you know, sell pay-per-views? And I just don't think that's going to happen. No matter who wins this fight, the question becomes is, who's next? You look at the top 15 at 135. So, obviously, Shevchenko, number one challenger. Then you got Holly Holm, number two, which we all expect she's going to fight Cyborg. That's kind of the route they seem going. Then you got Juliana Pena. Of course, she's coming off that loss. She's also talking about going down to 125. Then number four, Ronda Rousey. Why is Ronda Rousey still in the rankings? Isn't she like a WWE wrestler at this point?
She's a WWE wrestler now. Yeah, I mean.
By the way, if you've seen that video of her acting, oof, that was bad.
Are you talking about Fast and the Furious? Are you talking about WWE?
Oh no, I'm talking about the WWE video that came online the other day, and I was like, oof, that's bad.
Yeah, bro, they're gonna probably do like a 4-on-4 match where three of the MMA fighters don't really train that much. Like, that's gonna be a pretty bad match. But Shayna Baszler was an amazing wrestler in
That's what I've heard. She's doing really well there. So
yeah, anyway,
so number five challenger. Now we're down to Raquel Pennington, who I believe is almost recovered from her injury. Then it's Sarah McMahon, Kat Zingano, Jermaine Day, Ramonda May, Liz Carmuth, Alexis Davis. I guess you lean Raquel Pennington.
I think Sarah McMahon, if she wins. Yeah. I think if Sarah McMahon wins, she probably gets the title shot. They're on the same card. I guess Pennington could get there, but Sarah is more of a sure thing. To me, the money fight is, we all know what the money fight is, right? Like, it's if Nunes wins this fight, and then obviously do Cyborg Holm. Let's say Cyborg beats Holly Holm. I think Amanda Nunes versus Cyborg is the fight you could
They've talked about they don't. Neither one of them wants that fight.
I know, but still, who cares? Like, I mean, I know neither of them want that fight, but you still try and make that fight happen if you're the UFC, because that fight could headline a pay-per-view, I think, and be successful.
I mean, it definitely could headline a pay-per-view. Of course, Cyborg now has a boxing license, which I saw people say she now has leverage over the UFC. I was like, I don't know about that one.
You know, they haven't really gotten a return on investment, probably, when you look at her contract and what she's brought.
Well, I mean, look at the amount of money they paid for her to fight in Invicta. I definitely think that you could probably say they've not gotten their what they expected out of that deal.
I mean, look, they got Cyborg to make a super fight, and they haven't made one yet. Nope. Like, that's why they signed Cyborg, to make a super fight with Ronda Rousey. And they have not gotten one. All they've gotten is mismatches. I think you've got to figure out how to get Nunes and Cyborg in the cage together. Because the thing with Cyborg is, like, she doesn't want to fight anybody, but then she wants to fight everybody. So, who knows? I just think when you look at a fight that you could make Amanda Nunes a star, and you could finally give Cyborg an opponent where a lot of people will care, that's probably it. I mean, Holm-Cyborg is a good fight, don't get me wrong. Definitely the biggest UFC fight they can make for Cyborg at this point. But I believe Nunes has experience at 145. She's a big fighter at 135. And when you think of absolute wrecking machines, those two are the ones that come to mind. So I know they both have talked about not wanting that fight, but money talks.
Yes, money definitely does talk there. Now, the new co-main event of this fight card is Neil Magny versus Rafael Dos Anjos. It was very interesting to hear Sean Shelby say that RDA was the backup plan, which, of course, RDA jumped up to 170 in his last fight, being Tariq Safdie. Of course, that was falling back-to-back losses against Tony Ferguson and Eddie Alvarez. And Neil Magny on the other side, he does enter this fight following that win against Johnny Hendricks, but he has been on the sideline due to an injury. And, you know, right when he was healthy, ready to go, he got this opportunity. And, you know, I think really the storyline of this fight has got to be, how does RDA overcome a 10-inch reach advantage in this fight? Neil Magny has a 80-inch reach, 70 inches for Rafael Dos Anjos. To me, that's the storyline behind this. And I will say this, when I looked at the odds for this fight, I am pretty surprised to see how big of, you know, the underdog that Neil Magny was. Currently, as we're recording this podcast, he is plus 140. It had gotten up to plus 180 at one point, and Neil Magny's my pick in this fight. I think Neil will be able to use his reach that's going to cause problems, and he works his way towards a three-round decision.
Yeah, we are simpatico here.
Okay, congratulations, Rafael Dos Anjos, for winning the fight.
Yeah, and Amanda Nunes for retaining her title. Yeah, it's that's just hard to grapple with, especially because it's not like Neil Magny is Stefan Struve. Like, he knows how to use his reach. There's your post-fight recap of the fight night card. Neil Magny does a nice job of utilizing his reach. And I think for Dos Anjos, I guess, how do you combat that? Kicking the hell out of Neil Magny would be my suggestion, mm-hmm. going to the body. And he will probably be able to do that too. This is a fight where originally when it was announced, my head was in the headspace of looking at Dos Anjos, but the more and more you look at their previous fights, it's just hard to grapple with the idea of Dos Anjos outpointing Neil Magny over three rounds, just because I think constantly in each round, you're going to have Neil in a much better position to land strikes and outpoint Rafael Dos Anjos. So this is a dramatic challenge for Dos Anjos. This is going to tell you where RD is, whether or not he has a chance to compete for a welterweight championship. And then Neil Magny, he's really put things together the last few years, and this is a big-time platform for him to jump and vault himself up into significant contendership status. So both these guys will enter the cage. One of them will leave as a serious guy at 170. I think it'll probably be Neil Magny. But always, when you do have a fighter deal with injuries, there is a concern as it regards to how they come out of it. And so that's something you have to look at when it comes to Neil Magny. But if he fights like how he's fought in some of his more recent wins, I think he can feel pretty good going with the underdog in this fight.
Yeah, you know, and when you look at the welterweight division, because this is a big matchup at 170 pounds, currently Neil Magny tied with Donald Cerrone for the number six title challenger at 170. You know, we'll see what's next for Tyron Woodley. You know, maybe is it a rematch against Robbie Lawler? We know we've got Stephen Thompson and Masvidal coming up, Damian Maia, Colby Covington coming up. And, you know, look, I'll say this with Colby Covington. You know, if he beats Damian Maia, I think his talk is tweeting his way into a title shot.
Yeah, he's done the exact opposite of what Robbie Lawler has done. I mean, Robbie Lawler talked his way out of a title shot almost post fight, which it makes sense why, given what he's dealing with, and good to see Matt Hughes doing so much better. But the exact opposite of Robbie did is what Colby has done, in that every second he has done something crazy, said something outrageous, and made people talk about him. The biggest problem for Covington is he's a very boring fighter to watch fight, and that is definitely not in his favor. But sure, man, if he goes out wrestles Damian Maia, he's certainly in a slot above the winner of Magny RDA, but lining it up, I think it's pretty simple. You have Lawler ahead of everybody else, and then you have, Masvidal Thompson probably next, and then you have the winner of Maia Covington, and then you have the winner of this fight. Well, so if Maia beats Colby Covington, I would probably slot them behind the winner of this fight, but if Covington beats Maia, I would slot him above the winner of RDA Magny. That's kind of how I would line it up. And then you always got, Santiago Ponzinibbio.
Yeah, you've got Carlos Condit sitting out there, which
he'll be in the chat. You guys got to ask him in the chat on Fight TV.
He's in the chat on Fight TV. I also saw a tweet from Brandon Gibson within the last week that Carlos was in the gym training, which, of course, that got everyone kind of questioning. Maybe is he looking at fighting again? I know people kind of mentioned if Condit wanted to fight him against Santiago Ponzinibbio would be a fight that would make all the sense in the world. But, you know, but really it all depends on what's going to happen with Tyron Woodley next there in terms of that.
Don't forget CM Punk is training also. So.
They got to do CM Punk Mike Jackson. Like, that has to be the fight they're making.
Yeah, that has to be the fight, and he'll probably lose. By the way, while we're talking about this, you know who I want to see Tyron Woodley fight?
Who's that?
And he's going to retire, Ben Askren. Shout out to Ben Askren. I wish he would have been able to fight the best in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about that on my podcast this week. You know, it's as a just a fan of the sport, I think it's just you just wish we would have seen Ben Askren fight in the UFC just to see where he would stack up. But I think that it's also one of those things of you're happy for him because he made a crap ton of money fighting in one championship.
It's true. I wish I would have seen Ben Askren fight the best in the UFC, but I tell you what, 3.5 minutes into seeing it, I probably would change the channel. So, yeah, shout out to Ben Askren, really dominant, a guy who flies at his own pace. I definitely messed up that phrase, but he's definitely an individual. He's made his money, seems like a guy who makes his own decisions, feels great about him, and the Co-Main Event podcast did a nice job of framing his career in that they basically said that when you talk about the best welterweights of all time, he won't be the first guy you talk about, but 5 minutes into the conversation, somebody's going to be like, you know who else? Ben Askren. Like, that's a good way to frame it, because we never really saw him beaten, and who knows? He could always make the case that he was the greatest welterweight of all time, but yeah, he probably wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's never ultimately going to know exactly where he does stand there at welterweight. Also, this main card, Henry Cejudo, Wilson Heiss, big matchup at 125 pounds. You know, I think it would, you know, obviously you got the wrestling of Cejudo and the jiu-jitsu game of Wilson Heiss, but I do like Henry Cejudo in this matchup.
Gosh, I feel so bad. I like him too, but I hate the odds on this one. At like -300 for Cejudo. Look, Henry has the wrestling advantage in all likelihood. Heiss is a really good wrestler, and more than that, just a absolute badass grappler. I mean, if this one does hit the ground, I feel really good about the idea of Heiss coming in and locking on a submission. Cejudo is strong, like an absolute, like, an ox on steroids, although obviously Cejudo isn't on steroids. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that. But Henry Cejudo is such a great athlete, so much upside, I think. And he performs really well when he's not fighting Demetrius Johnson. And his opponent is not Demetrius Johnson. So I think he's going to do well. I think he's going to beat Wilson on the feet, the much better striker. Just because of his ability to do big damage in combinations. And because of his wrestling base, I think it's obviously going to be enough to defend the takedowns of Wilson Heiss, which is where he would want to take the fight and where I think he could win. Because Cejudo controls the avenue of where this can take place, I think he outstrikes Wilson Heiss. But at +270, +260, Wilson Heiss is a very live dog here, because I think he has a significant advantage on the ground when it comes to submission grappling.
Yeah, that's a very good point you bring up there. Also, we've got Tyson Pedro, Alir Latifi. Tyson Pedro is the guy everyone's looking at as a potential future title challenger there. At 205 pounds, Alir Latifi, a guy that just he's stuck around the UFC, has done very well in the UFC. I think he's kind of, in a way, I think in some facets, he is a little bit of a forgotten guy. Of course, this is his first fight in over a year, of course, coming off that knockout loss against Ryan Bader last year in Germany. You know, when you look at the betting odds on this one, Tyson Pedro, a slight favorite at -140, and Tyson Pedro is my pick in this one.
Yeah, he's my pick as well. Don't feel good about it, because Ilir Latifi has fought a higher level of competition. Pedro, still an unknown, but he's gone out, finished fights, looked good, has upside. Clearly, drink when you guys that have upside. Let's just run it through real quick. So I don't Pedro, Cejudo, and Gavin Tucker. Those are my upside guys this week. Anyways, and Arjan Bular. But for Pedro, he has upside because, again, like, this is a guy who is not 40 years old and he's at 205. In fact, he's 25, which is a scary young age. If he comes out and completely dominates Latifi, it's time to get the hype machine rolling for Tyson Pedro. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he will be able to do that, but I certainly think he will win. Latifi is, if anything, an absolute veteran of the sport, a guy who keeps his composure, and will present a real tough challenge for Pedro. But this is the big time litmus test for Tyson Pedro. It's going to let you know whether or not this is a guy to bookmark at 205, and we know 205 and heavyweight need those young up and comers. I think Pedro's that guy.
In the opening matchup of the pay-per-view, a fight that I think has fight of the night written all over it, Jeremy Stephens, Gilbert Melendez. In terms of kind of breaking down this fight, I think a lot of unknowns, and it's a lot of unknowns in terms of Gilbert Melendez, of what will he look like at 145 pounds. Jeremy Stephens said this week that he feels that Gilbert hasn't evolved, and that he should have made this cut to 145 a long time ago. I'm picking Jeremy Stephens, and I think the reason I'm picking him is just more about the unknowns we have about Gilbert Melendez and the fact of, Gilbert has, not fared well in his past couple fights.
Yeah, this is a tough one. This is one where I was just waiting to see who you pick so I could pick the other fighter because, we've agreed on all four main card fights, and when I was previewing this one, Jason, gosh, I tell you what, I changed my mind 15 times. Like, I went back and forth. And it was more about what the question marks I had about these guys rather than the positives. Like, the question marks for Gilbert, he hasn't won since 2013. He's been inactive, fighting once per year the last 4 or 5 years. For Stevens, he's put together 2 straight losses. But the level of competition for the losses of both these fighters is so damn high. For Stevens, you look at his last 3 losses, Mocano, Frankie Edgar, Max Holloway. You look at the last 3 losses for Melendez, it's Barbosa, Alvarez, and Pettis. Now, the fight that gives me the biggest sign of major concern for Gilbert Melendez is his last one. Barbosa won that one clearly. He did a lot of damage with the kicks. And prior to that, I thought Melendez was pretty okay in the first round against Anthony Pettis. He eventually got tapped out, and really good against Eddie Alvarez. And obviously the fight against Diego Sanchez was an absolute barn burner. So Melendez is the pick here. There's much less reason to feel good about it than picking Stevens, because Stevens has performed at a higher level more recently against better competition more recently in 2016. But the reason why I like Gilbert Melendez is I believe he is motivated. I believe the new weight class will be a good thing. And most importantly, I think he's going to come out here and be uber aggressive with his stand-up. And I think that's going to swing the fight in his favor. I think it's going to be incredibly close, but I think his volume and his pace will put him in a position to win a decision here. A close decision, but one in which he will be able to land his right hand early and often and squeak out with the win. But gosh, I feel awful about this pick.
Yeah, it's just a lot of uncertainties with this matchup. In terms of the prelims, I think we mentioned a little earlier, McMahon, Vieira, Glenn Tucker really are the fights that you look at. In terms of those, is there any other fighters on this fight card that you're intrigued by? I will say this. The fighter that I am probably intrigued by, and really it ultimately has nothing about what he's doing inside the octagon, it's about what he's doing outside the octagon, and that's Cajun Johnson.
You think if he loses, he gets another fight?
No.
Yeah, that sucks. That sucks because, I mean, he's been so outspoken, which I appreciate. But, yeah, the UFC, probably not a big fan of, what he said. And I mean, when you look at what Cajun Johnson said, Jason, if you were the UFC, kind of how would you communicate with him?
I mean, look, it sounds like kind of, you know, the two sides are talking, but, look, at the end of the day, you have to, you have to have guys like Cajun Johnson. I mean, Neil Magny has been very vocal about trying to unify the fighters, and Neil this week, talking about the fact of, hey, it just seems like fighters don't want to help other fighters out. It's been a long time since we've seen Cajun Johnson, and I don't like this matchup at all for him.
Well, when you think of Adriano Martins, I think of one thing, man. He's got the grappling, but I think of punching power. And when I think of Cajun Johnson's issues, it's his ability to take a hard hit punch or a hard kick.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's a bad matchup for him.
Yeah, I don't like the matchup for him. I mean, and if you look at the betting odds, Adriel Martinez is a big betting favorite in this matchup. And so, I mean, you look at and Cajun is nearly a 4-1 underdog. Adriel Martinez, nearly a 5-1 favorite. He is by far the biggest favorite on this card. The second biggest favorite is Henry Cejudo, who is almost a 3.5-1 favorite. We mentioned about Tucker and Glenn. I'm gonna go with the upset, in terms of the betting odds, and go with Rick Glenn now being at Team Alpha Male. And but man, Gavin Tucker, just a fun guy to watch. I do like Sarah McMahon, Ashley Evans Smith, Mitch Clark to get victories on the FS1 prelims.
Yeah, on the FS1 prelims, Sarah McMahon, I think the wrestling will be the issue there for Ketlin Vieira. But if she's able to keep it standing, she could steal this fight for sure. Ashley Evans Smith in the women's bantamweight matchup against Sarah Morass. Gavin Tucker, I like him over Rick Glenn. And I think Alex White is going to beat Mitch Clark at lightweight. And then on the fight pass, Martins and Luis Enrique.
Oh, you're not going to go with the wrestler making his UFC debut?
It's a tough one, but the thing with him, with Bular, is when you kind of look at what I look for with wrestlers making their UFC debut with not a big-time track record is going out and finishing fights in the first round and just dominating fighters. And I think a win over Joe Yeager for Bular, and I like how you called him the wrestler because you didn't want to say his first name. But Arjun Bular, I'm going to assume. I probably messed it up. But, my big issue for him is not going out finishing fights in the first round. And so when you see a guy like that, I always hedge and go with the fighter who's already had the UFC experience. And Henrique at 24 is younger than Bular. But it could be a bad pick when you check out a wrestler who's just able to go out and take him down and just – keep that position for all three rounds. That is more likely than not, I tell you that much.
Yeah, but that's one of those matchups that, interested to see how that does go down. Of course, it all takes place on Saturday night in Edmonton, UFC 215. You'll have the early prelims on Fight Pass at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. Then the TV prelims on FS1, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Of course, your main card on pay-per-view, 10 p.m. Eastern Time and 7 p.m. Pacific Time. John Anik, Joe Rogan, and Daniel Cormier will be calling the fights on Saturday night. We'll just give a little programming note. No post-fight podcast. Well, because I guess I don't know if I'm going to have power on Sunday. So no post-fight podcast for this one. So we will be back next week. We've got a UFC fight card, UFC Pittsburgh, Luke Rockhold, David Branch, so you can look out for that next week. Also, going to have a new MMA report on Wednesday of next week. Scott Kent, the man behind Lion Fights, will be on the podcast. Also line up some other interviews on that podcast as well. So that does wrap it up for the preview podcast. Of course, you can always give myself a follow at Jason_Floyd. You can follow Daniel on Twitter at Daniel Galvan DGG. And of course, don't forget, UFC 215 will be available on Fight TV for $59.99. You can get the Fight app today by going to fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that's fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. And speaking of Fight, on Saturday, along with UFC 215, they will have the ACB card.
This is the Crush Report with Jeff Crushell.
When we look at training adaptations, progressions, and practice strategy for optimizing performance, you always hear someone say, it's not practice that makes perfect, it's perfect practice that makes perfect. And that's always bothered me. I just like to put it out there. There's no such thing as perfect practice, nor should you try to be perfect, because the real world of sports performance is never perfect. You see, if you really want to tap into skill development and influence sports performance, you need to make your practice imperfect. Skill acquisition is all about the body building corrective models to solve problems that occur in the competitive setting. So if you've been working to create a perfect practice environment with perfect conditions under perfect circumstances, you may very well be limiting your performance. About 85% of coaching is based on the brain central model, where you communicate with the brain to make adjustments, like constantly giving an athlete verbal cues. The problem It's totally unrelated to sport, where the body reacts to the environment with little or no communication with the brain. So try to create variability. In baseball, throw different pitches at batting practice. In golf, do drills with a reverse grip. On the ice, set up controlled skating drills with loose skates. Be creative. And remember, the best athletes are the ones who can easily adapt to the constantly changing environment of competitive sport. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.